Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes on BBS Radio, and this is the two-hour-long zero-point show. My website is at www.zeropoint.ca. I have a packed show for today with three very interesting guests, and I know some of it's really going to be quite wild, some of the information being brought out, and we're in such a critical time, the life of humankind upon this planet. And our only hope, as I see it, is that we have this mass awakening of human consciousness that spreads around the globe. And we are so lucky to have stations like BBS Radio and other truth networks that are bringing this truth out to awaken humankind. It's like mankind has been in a slumber for the past century, and we've never dealt with all the evils that have gone on in human history. All these crimes that go by unpunished and the culprits never caught. And now these things have culminated in what I call the ascendancy of the New World Psychiatric Disorder. They like to call it the New World Order, that they want to bring out the New World Order. But it's not a New World Order. This is an old world. The same psychopaths, perverts, and pedophiles that have governed human history through the past century. These are the people who make billions and millions and billions and trillions on murdering your children and murdering people around the world and financing the military-industrial complex. These are the people who spray you with chemtrails from the sky, who will put deadly poisons into your vaccines, who will prevent you from having holistic health care, who will put fluoride in your water, who will chip you and your animals. The planet today is run by a group of psychopaths, and these people have never been dealt with through the history of humankind. And through my life, my main interest, I'm a psychologist. I'm 59 years old. 30 years ago, I became interested in the nature of human consciousness because I was a psychologist and interested in psychotherapy and helping people. And so the past 30 years, I've studied consciousness, first from the Western scientific perspective, but then through mystical and occult studies. I've written books on two of the classic occult books of the modern age, The Secret Doctrine of H.P. Blavatsky, published in 1888, and G.I. Gurdjieff's book, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. I've written six books on my mystical studies, and that is where my heart is at, to be working as a writer of mystical and spiritual psychology and science. Unfortunately, or fortunately, 2.5 years ago, my son showed me the movie Loose Change. And I watched that movie and I could see immediately that there was a huge lie perpetrated about 9/11. And I had no idea of the answers or the solutions, but I knew we had been told a lie. And it was like waking up to the horror of it. How could our government and our media and our police, how has our society become so criminally corrupted in this way? These people have intentionally fostered on the human race a complete delusional system, thinking Osama bin Laden and his reindeer brought down the two towers. There is such overwhelming evidence today that anyone who believes the official story is an idiot, if they've looked at the evidences, of course. You could have been like me for 5 years. I had no idea of 9/11 and how it was an inside job. I had no idea because my life was elsewhere with my children, five children, and I worked as a psychologist in prisons in the Ontario Correctional Institute, and I'm interested in spiritual psychology. And while I was sleeping and unaware, all this criminality has been going on for decades, centuries. And it's reached a portion now, a monstrous proportion, where the future and destiny of humankind on this planet is in a perilous balance. And it can go either way. By 2012, what will we have by 2012? we may have the New World Psychiatric Disordered System in place, where these criminal psychopaths and egomaniacs and megalomaniacs rule the planet. And they'll chip you, and you won't own anything. And they'll reduce the world's population to their 500 million, which is in their plans. It's even stated in Club of Rome documents, UN documents, Henry Kissinger. These people are eugenicists. You see, you have a group of psychopathic mass murderers who have taken over control of our governments. Not only is this true in North America, it's true around the world. All the peoples of the world have been deceived by their own governments. And now what we have is a worldwide truth movement where people are beginning to wake up and realize the criminality of what has been done and what is being done. The United States is going to be torn apart. You're going to be impoverished as a people. You got so many people living in tent cities, out of their homes, on the streets. You got a government you cannot trust who will have enforced inoculations and spread poisons among the population. They want to reduce your food supply. They want to create a fascist police state. They'll watch you through your new TVs. They'll chip you when you're born. This is insane. We live in an insane world. And that's what happened to me. I began with 9/11, the Loose Change movie, and I couldn't believe it. It sent me into an expanded mystical kind of state. I went through a period of just shock. It's like my whole false consciousness system was broken down. Everything I believed, I realized, had been a lie, that our governments were honorable men and women, that they served us. That Osama bin Laden and his reindeer brought down the towers. That Kennedy was killed by a lone assassin. All these crimes they've done through human history, and no one's ever dealt with the underlying causes of it. And now, because we haven't dealt with it, these people are in control of our nations. And your states and your cities, it's a whole network intertwined through the whole of our society. They say Satan has a hierarchy of servants. And most of the people involved in these schemes, they're little minions. They just have their little role, and they're bought out through money, sex, or power, and they play their role and contribute to the destruction of humankind. They don't realize really what they're a part of, and then they wake up to it, and then they have to keep their silence for fear of death or losing their jobs and so on. You just think the incredible situation we're in. Where is the CIA? Where are all these police and intelligence networks in the United States and Canada? Why don't they serve the people anymore? Do they not realize what's going on? Why do regular poor people have to go out in the streets and march around for 9/11 truth? Where are the people who are supposed to be the police and intelligence who should be arresting these people and solving these crimes? Our police forces, our intelligence community, the judiciary, these forces have all become corrupted, thoroughly corrupted. It's unbelievable what's happened in the world. In my mystical studies through my life, I've realized that human being has seven levels. There's seven levels of human beings. And a human being is said to have seven chakras or energy centers in the vital body. And it is often said that most people are controlled by the three lower chakras. And those are associated with money, sex, and power. Now, that's what we have to understand about these people who call themselves the elites. As if they're some kind of elite. They're really the scum that rose to the top. That's what they are. They're the scum that rose to the top. They're the people who will spray you and your children and your pets and your land and your air. They'll spray you from the skies all over America. You're getting sprayed aluminum and barium salts, viral matter, desecrated blood plasma, and they've got all their biological weapons. They can spray those on you, too, from the skies. and people are so asleep, they walk around, they don't even know it's happening. And then they say, oh, you believe in conspiracy theories. If you don't believe in conspiracy theory, you're an idiot. History is ridden with conspiracies. That's what it's all about, and these conspiracies are going on now. And if we don't wake up to realize what's happening, that there is no future for humankind. You'll be impoverished, you'll be sickened, you'll die without attaining to your souls. Because the people who do this are of the lowest human types. They're ruled by the three lower chakras, and their motives are money, sex, and power. The first level of awakening in a human being is the awakening of the human heart. That's the title of my main book. It's The Heart Doctrine. Because this teaching of the heart is in all the religions. It's in Christianity, Judaism, and Kabbalah. It's in Tibetan Buddhism. It's in the Vedic teachings. It's in the secret doctrine of Blavatsky. A human being's real I is within your heart. And unless you open and awaken in your heart through your life, you won't attain to your soul. So this is a struggle on the planet Earth. It's a spiritual struggle. Because these are the lower types, and they want their new world order. Give me a break. It's an old world psychiatric disorder of pedophiles, perverts, and psychopaths who have risen to the top of our society. It's of the lowest type. So I've been through the last years. It's been a time in my life I could never have imagined waking up. And the more you learn about what's happening in the world, it just gets more and more terrible. There's like no end to it. You know, you begin with 9/11, and then you realize, oh, our governments have lied to us. We've become involved in a war. We've murdered going on 2 million people in the Middle East, all based on lies. And Americans think that they're serving humankind or protecting the world against terrorists? What a joke! To go out and wave your little American flags made in China? We all have to suffer remorse of conscience for the things we've allowed to be done in our countries and in the world and in the name of America and the name of Canada. It's so disgusting. It's disgraceful. When I woke up, I felt the wrath of God move through me. I was raised as a Christian and always tried to be a caring and compassionate person. And then I woke up to the horror of it, and I felt the wrath of God move through me. How could these people do such devious things? How could someone spray hundreds of thousands of people with chemtrails from the sky so that they can make money through the medical industries and such? We live in an insane world, and we have to take it back. And we need to take it back before 2012. I believe we have 3 years to take our nations back. And how do we take our nations back? All we have to have is the enforcement of our own criminal laws. Because our criminal laws restrict and ban the sponsorship of terrorist activities within our society and allow the governments of the countries of the world to seize the assets of the terrorists. So if we wake up and realize who the real terrorists are and seize their assets, well, the debt of the United States of America will be paid off. The debts of Canada would be paid off. The debts of nations around the world would be paid off. So I see as a new age, what do we want by 2012? By 2012, we want all the nations of the world, their national debts reduced to zero. We need to take the wealth of the world back from these psychopathic elites, pay off the debts of the nations, and have a whole new era and period for human evolution and education. People have no idea how we've been dummied down and deceived through our education, through our media, by our police, by our politicians. It is so unbelievable. There's nothing that reminds me the horror of the life of contemporary human beings. What most captures it for me is a quote from J. Edgar Hoover, former head of the FBI. He says, "The individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists." it does exist. Okay. Come back to these. So these people, this is a new world psychiatric disorder. Okay, so we want to take our world back from this, and this is a shared vision I'd like to promote through the world, that by 2012, all the debts of the nations around the world are reduced to zero, and these people are imprisoned around the world, and there'll be truth hearings, and all the deceptions of what has been done to us will be revealed. We have to bring about justice on this earth, or else we have no future for us. Okay, so I'm going to bring on our first guest from Montreal. Michael is part of the Montreal 9/11 Truth Movement. And hello, Michael. Welcome.
Hi there. How are you? Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, I'm really pleased. You brought your group, marched up from Montreal to Ottawa last year for the 9/11 event.
Yes, I did. Yes, it was really through the work of Robert Lewis here in Montreal. It was his really initiative, and so he called me up wanting some assistance from that group that I was able to bring together since 2005 or so, and I definitely embarked on it. But I was a little bit ill, so I didn't join in the march. But I was present in Ottawa for that day on the 11th.
Yeah, that was an empowering day, that day on the Parliament Hill. It was especially odd for me a bit because on that day in 2008, 2 years previously, 2006, was the day I woke up, and I and my girlfriend, Kay, were the only two on Parliament Hill with our little signs, 9/11 was an inside job, and I'd written up a four-page article kind of pinning it on the Bilderbergs and the deception and so on, and we were handing that out on Parliament Hill. Mm-hmm. And then there it was, like 2 years later, and there were hundreds of us, and we had the march through Ottawa. It was a really moving, empowering experience.
No, it definitely was. Hopefully we could do it again. It was really an awesome experience.
So, Michael, do say you have a big event coming up next Saturday evening in Montreal. Could you give us the details of that, and could you give us your website and share anything you'd like to? I'll hand it over to you.
Yes, certainly. Yes, this next Sunday, Saturday, March 14th, we're having a little show, a fundraiser with bands, a lot of music. It's going to be at the Crowbar in downtown Montreal on Crescent Street, 1221 Crescent Street. It'll begin at 9 o'clock in the evening and probably end around 3 o'clock in the morning. And we have Kenneth Fernandez, who's going to chair the event, and he's also going to show us some of his impersonating skills. He does a hell of a job impersonating Nelson Mandela, Jean Chrétien, George Bush Sr., and a whole bunch of other people.
Wow, that'd be fun.
And then we'll have three other bands performing. I'll do two songs myself on guitar. And it's a fundraiser event. It's $5 admission. We're also going to be giving out DVDs, and we're asking for donations, obviously, for that, too. And it's in preparation for our event next month where we're inviting Richard Gage. In Montreal. And
wow.
Professor Michel Shostakovich is going to chair the event for us again.
Oh, he's so brilliant.
Yeah.
His website, for people who don't know, www.globalresearch.ca.
Yeah.
One of the most brilliant men and most valuable work.
Well, we have the privilege of having him just around the corner. He lives just off the island of Montreal, and he's been very generous to us. He's chaired the event last year when David Rick Griffin came here to Montreal for us, and he chaired the event too. And then also we sponsored his French lecture on the global financial crisis in November 2008.
And I saw that on YouTube. That's available on YouTube.
Yes, correct. And then he did one in English, and we helped him promote the event from our group in January 2009. And so we've asked him, and he's been very helpful and supportive, and he definitely agreed to help us out with this event and chairing it when Richard Gage comes to town. So we're going to start promotion probably after the gig next week, and we're going to try to get the architects, the Order of Architects here in Quebec, and engineers, and all 66 fire stations from across Montreal. We're going to hammer on them and give out DVDs and pamphlets that explain to them why it's important and why they should also be informed about this, too.
Yeah, I think the police, it's so important that we spread the truth among our police and firemen, because these people who are supposed to serve us and work for us, in a way, they're not fulfilling their jobs. Like, what's happened? I can't believe the firemen and police of New York City. They had hundreds of their comrades die, and they all know there were bombs in the building. And I wonder, why doesn't anyone say anything? How come these people aren't outraged?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like people are numbed. Everything has been so traumatizing.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right, Christopher. I can't remember who came out with the quote. I think it was in a recent email. I think maybe it was from Matthew Buchler from Ottawa.
Yes.
Where some of us are scared that our groups have been maybe infiltrated. But we should also look at the other way around and say that we've also infiltrated the police and firemen and engineers, because whenever we go around and give out leaflets and DVDs, we're also infiltrating them and also putting things into their own mind and making them aware. So it's like we should look at it from the other point of view also, that we're also infiltrating them too.
Yeah.
Not always be the victim, but we're also succeeding ourselves too. Every time that we speak to someone, we speak to a lawyer, friend, or professor, or fireman, or policeman, we're creating something. We're starting to make them aware of something, and they'll spread the message on too, you know? So,
Exactly. And it's funny also, it's like, in a way, they want to infiltrate our groups, like the 9/11 groups. But I mean, no one in the 9/11 groups ever plans anything like a real criminal act of any kind. I mean, all people are asking for is truth and trying to inform people. So, in a way, they're open groups. So it's not like you can come in, they can place their, you know, people into your organizations. I mean, the danger is that their people will stage things to bring a bad name to groups. That's mm-hmm. the problem, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Like where they had these cops in Montebello who kind of staged that rowdiness, and it turned out they were cops.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's so transparent. You know, really, once you begin to see it, eh?
Mm-hmm. No,
the criminality of these people.
Mm-hmm. I think we had an incident, too, during the march in Ottawa and Montreal. We were at the Parc, Mont-Royal, I can't remember which park it was, where we started the march. And there were these two fellows who were kind of suspicious, and they came to us and said, we're from the United States, and they were wearing the same identical black shirt, and then one of the girls in our group, just by coincidence, she just takes a picture of these folks, and we analyzed it a few days later and said, oh my God, these were the same guys who were wearing dark sunglasses, and they were telling us they came from the United States, and they had the same identical shoes below. They were brand new shoes, and we actually saw the color of their soles were extremely identical to one another, black shirts and dark glasses.
They're issued uniform.
Yeah, it's like, wow, it's like, oh my God, it's like, these guys look more like spies than anything else.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And they came by, gave us they acknowledged us, they said hello, and then just walked away. And it's like, wow, what are these fellows? They came from the United States to see us, so they're always around, you know, so we have to expect it, so nothing strange about it, but...
Tell me, Michael, do you think, that the 9/11 truth movement is growing, like the awareness of it among the citizenry of Montreal?
Well, I got to say, from my experience, I think it is, because I've been at this now since the first event I had was in 2006, when I rented a hall here at Centre Saint-Pierre, where Richard Gage will be speaking, and where Webster Tarpley spoke for us, Michel Soshadovsky spoke for us, and also who else there spoke for us, I can't recall, but... I get regular emails from people from all walks of life, students, professionals, government employees. Goes, how can I help? This is very interesting. Please let me know.
Yeah,
and constantly. And sometimes I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to say, you know, because We're not very structured, but we're very mobilized and doing stuff. We've already done like two lectures in the past, like what, 2 years? Two lectures almost every year in the past 2 years. And we're planning to do two lectures for the future in the next coming years. Up until the anniversary of 9/11, we plan to have two speakers here in Montreal. So we're getting on a regular basis emails from all kinds of people. And for example, we have in our group, we have like Robert Lewis, who's an English teacher. We have one other gentleman who's, I can't remember what he was, but I think he works for Agriculture Canada. Some intellectual from there. Then we also have a software engineer in our group. We have an IT specialist. We have also, a lawyer. We're translators have come on board asking us if we're requiring any assistance for translation. And I think it is growing, definitely. We're constantly getting bombarded with emails.
I mean, people don't realize the precariousness of our situation because it's not just 9/11. See, people don't realize that we never made any effort to catch true terrorists of 9/11. And they were terrorists. It was a terrorist act.
Right.
But we've made no effort to catch those terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So now those terrorists are in control of our society.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like people think, oh, it scares a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is scary. It scared me. It horrifies me.
No, absolutely. It terrified me. I have a hard time talking about it with my own family and colleagues and friends. But I think the more we hammer at it, eventually, it'll wither away this fear or whatever block that's blocking them. Just a question of time, and I think we're really ahead. If you compare the resistance movement or the awareness that was going on after the JFK assassination, I think we're years ahead thanks to the internet and thanks to things like yourself.
So many of these past things now, the evidence has come out. Like now, it's clear evidence about Kennedy and Oklahoma City bombings. It was a fraud. London train bombings were a fraud. All of these things, the downing of that airplane last week in Buffalo, had that woman on, the 9/11 truth woman, whose husband had died, and she was bringing civil suit against the whole administration and the people behind 9/11. They murdered her.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's just unbelievable. So many of these things in our society. You know, the shooting in Montreal at the college, that was a black ops operation. They wanted new gun legislation. It was done. I could see it from watching the media on that day. They had one witness on there, Tracy Eck, who was supposed to be a student, and this was her story, okay?
Yeah.
She said that she was outside the college and she saw the gunman shooting people outside the college. Then she says she was sitting inside the cafeteria having a cigarette with her friend when all of a sudden the gunman came in there and he opened up his huge overcoat and had a huge machine gun and started shooting people. And then she said she ran out of the college and hid in the bushes. Now, this was on CTV, okay, one of their main witnesses. The whole thing was staged. Like, firstly, if this woman saw the people being shot outside the college, she's not then going to go inside the college, sit down and have a cigarette, and be surprised when the guy comes in.
Mm.
And then when she runs out of the building, she's not going to hide in the bushes outside the college. No one else did. They run down the street where the police were.
Wow.
The whole thing was a fraud. I could see it. If you could get the TV network news for that day, there were so many things. I wrote it up in an article, and I came to Montreal, handed out the article on the streets of Montreal 2 days after the event at the Darfur demonstration. But nothing ever comes of it. You see, we don't have any police.
Right.
The police don't. Like, where are the police?
Right. Was this you're speaking about the Dawson College shooting, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I never really took a serious look at that incident. Quite
obvious
frankly.
Black ops operation.
Okay.
Obvious. It was all their witness. The main clips of their witness were recorded even before it happened.
Mm.
Yeah, it's full of riddles, just like 9/11. It was a complete staged event.
Yeah.
Completely. I could go on for an hour about it. Give me your email. I'll send you an article I wrote on it, I distributed in Montreal.
No, sure. Send it to me, Christopher. I'd be very curious to look at it. It doesn't surprise me anyways, even though I have not looked at it, but these things don't surprise me anymore if indeed it's all true. after learning about history, you know, the past like 4 years, I've been really reading about stuff that I should have been taught really in high school.
Yeah,
and
high school, universities, they don't teach us anything. They've
right.
been intentionally dummied down.
Mm-hmm.
They really have. And what these elites do, they want gun laws. So what they do is they go out and they have a black ops operation, some MK Ultra victim. They go out, they do a mass murder, they blame some guy, they cover up, they control the crime scene, and that's what they do. They stage the mass murder to then bring in gun laws the next year, and they named the new gun laws in Canada after this woman who lost her daughter. They name it after her, and they come out as though they're serving the Canadian public, and the whole time, the whole thing was a fraud.
Right.
They committed the murder. Disgusting.
No, it definitely is. It's hard to fathom what's going on sometimes, that you have to sometimes just like go, just walk away, and sometimes you have to maybe tune into some of your favorite songs, whatever, and meditate over it, because sometimes it's overwhelming. But I still love doing what I'm doing, trying to alert the people, but you have to take a breather every now and then, because it's really overwhelming and really scary, diabolical, what's been going on.
It is. I know. I struggle in my own life to try to stay strong, and I'm only able to do so because of my kind of spiritual belief and realization that gives me strength to be in it and have courage. You know the word courage actually comes from French for la cour, meaning heart.
Mm.
So to have courage means to have a new heart.
Right.
You see, because these psychopaths who do all these things in our society, these people are heartless. They don't have a heart. They have no feeling or compassion or capacity for love for other living beings.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, like, could you, like, how much would I have to pay you, Michael, that you would spray the people of Montreal with chemtrails and poison them? Would you do it for $100,000?
No, never at all. That's nothing. Nothing that would interest me. Nothing at all.
Yeah, that's because you have a soul,
mm-hmm.
and that's what these people don't have. They mm-hmm. they lose their souls. They sell their souls. They lose them to Satan. They really do. Like Satan, people don't realize that it's a higher dimensional being, exists in hyperspace, and possesses three people through higher space dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Not to sound too bizarre. But there's a science to this. There is, you know, these people are soulless creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And they've held the evolution of humankind, the race on this planet, they've held it back for centuries.
Yes.
And I regard you and people like you, Michael, like in the 9/11 truth movement, you people have courage. You have courage. You go out there and you do it because you believe in justice. You believe in truth.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the soldiers of the new age, people who want to bring forth truth to this world and resolve these terrible things been done in our society. So I honor you, sir, and I hope to be at your event next week. Do you have a last thing, Michael? Do you have a website?
Yes, we do, and we should be actually improving it. We got Jean-François, who was a software engineer, who's going to make it look a lot more interesting in the next coming weeks. And the website is MTL for Montreal, so MTL911truth.org.
Great.
Okay, and so the acts that are performing there will be Tim's Myth, there'll be Tatva and Eagle Rip, and then there's also will be Kenneth Fernandez when with his routine of stand-up comedy and impersonating stuff. And it will begin at 9 o'clock, and again, it's $5 admission, and everyone's welcome and help support us. Anybody who wants to get involved or help us with our publicity campaign for the Richard Gage and Michel Sosudovsky lecture in April, come along, and we'll share each other's emails, phone numbers, because we'll need as much support as we can to publicize the event in universities, streets, and look forward to having as many folks as possible from within Montreal and outside of Montreal. So
yeah, thank you very much, Michael. And you know, we just all have to double and redouble our efforts. We're at such a precarious time. We don't have time to waste anymore.
Yes.
You know, that's how I find I can't go on with normal life anymore. How can I go on with normal life when I know there are people trying to mass murder my children, my neighbors, and destroying our land?
Yeah.
It's so disgusting, these people. And yet if we could take our country back from them, people have no idea the wealth of our nation.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we've been impoverished intentionally by these people. There was so much abundance on the earth. If we can take it back, the only real problem in the world is these people,
mm-hmm.
these criminal elites, so-called elites,
yeah.
the scum that rose to the top.
No, that's right. Instead of being part of the problem, we should be part of the solution. Just doing something is just part of the solution. So, and it's also uplifting when we're doing it, so we shouldn't hold
okay.
us back. Yeah.
Thanks, Michael. I hope to see you next Saturday.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for your time, and hope to see you very soon.
I hope you can hear our last guest today, or I'll send you the archives. Hawking, David Hawking today is astonishing research on 9/11, beyond me, but his work's very important. I would encourage Montreal 9/11 truthers to look at his work. It takes it to a whole new level of analysis.
Sure, please forward to me, Christopher, because I'd be very interested. And
if you could email me, and I just look at my website. My email address is up there, and we'll make contact further. Okay, thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Good day.
Bye-bye. Okay, goodbye. Now, I got word from Don that we have Don Nikoloff in the background here. Don, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Holmes. How are you?
Okay, I must say, Don, for guests who aren't familiar with Don, Don has the Evident Footprints show on BBS Radio, 1 o'clock at night, my time, Eastern. And this is one of the most brilliant investigators, and I love your show, Don. I try to take it in. It even upsurps coast to coast for me.
Well, I hear that from more and more listeners. Thank you very much. I'm honored.
And I had Dr. K on my show about three or four shows again, and I love having Dr. K up there with you.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking either I found a follower or or I'm following you. You're echoing my sentiments. I haven't heard one word that I disagree with yet.
Great. Speak up if you do, because it's interesting. All we want is the truth, Don, and we're interested in love. It's a cosmic phenomena, and we have to deal with these criminal psychopaths who have taken over our society. And,
yes.
And you're another brave soldier out there, someone who has courage to bring forth all the original research you do. I'm so thankful to you. Your material on the Buffalo plane crash was so valuable. That's just one example.
Well, I'm flattered. A man of your accomplishments in the academic arena, in the scientific realm, and metaphysics, which has really been my whole life. It's something I had to suppress as a child. And yet, when I came out with this information, I also came out with the source of the information. That doesn't mean I don't pour through books or go on the internet looking for tidbits of information acquired through research, but I use my discernment above all. And I consider it a gift from God, the same place my faith and my trust in God's word comes from. This is a spiritual battle that we're fighting.
It absolutely. You know, in the Bible, they say the word of God is sown into their hearts.
Yes.
You know that?
Yes.
See,
yes,
the way we come to know God is through the awakening of the human heart. Because,
mm-hmm.
see, these people who have done this mind thing to the modern society, they've conditioned the mind in the head. And when people awaken, it breaks down that conditioning in the mind, in the head. And that can lead to the awakening of the heart.
Yes. Now, believe it or not, Dr. Holmes, Don just chat messaged the message to me that Ken Adachi is on the line, too.
I'm trying to link to who Ken, I don't know. Or Ken Fernandez, my next guest.
Oh, wait, no, I guess it's Ken Fernandez, is it, Don? Let me know. I thought he meant Ken Adachi because he just put Ken up.
I guess it's
your next guest. I apologize.
I don't know, Don, if you're willing to, I heard my last guest today, David Hawking, on your show, And he's going to be coming up at the end of our show today. And if you're able to stay on for the full show, you're most welcome to.
Well, I would be honored. I hadn't planned for it, but I can make the time. I interviewed David Hawkins and Field McConnell on my show last Tuesday, as well as March 30th on RBN. And their information is just off the shelf. That's the only way I can describe it. I describe it as a head-on collision with the research I've been doing. They have many of the missing puzzle pieces that seem to just seamlessly integrate with all the other information.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Buffalo plane crash.
Yeah.
That research began on a live show on BBS. I actually turned on the TV with the sound down and wrote down names of witnesses. And when I went down the rabbit hole on the witnesses, I saw that they were part of an organization planning to obfuscate the cause of the crash. And Dr. Cave, through my research, interviewed Stephen Wallace, a paramedic, EMS technician, former police officer in Buffalo, New York, who went to the crash site and interviewed people who said the plane was on fire. No ice.
Yeah.
Of course, those people are not qualified in the midst of night to determine if there is ice on an airplane.
Yeah.
So,
It's funny, Don, as you gain discernment and you realize the criminality of the corporate media, I can tell just by watching TV, I can tell things are frauds just by watching the TV, how they spin it. Like I could see, watching CNN, when they had the Mumbai attacks, I could tell it was a fraud just by watching the TV coverage.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't show, how they have their expert witnesses who's there in 5 minutes who's telling you it's Al-Qaeda. Like, it's so fraudulent. Once you wake up, you just see right through it.
Well, they did that on 9/11, too, and going back and looking at the videotapes, which is really something I never focused on. I was busy doing the genealogical research of what I call infiltrators. Okay, I've combined the word infill to the word traitor. And I don't mean traders like someone who engages in commerce. I mean traitor, as if they're committing treason.
Yeah.
You can't commit treason if you're not from this country, if you're not legally an American citizen. I don't care how long you've been here. If you've entered the country illegally under false pretenses, forged documents, and we have this definitely from George H.W. Bush all the way through Barack Obama. These people are usurpers. They're frauds. And they are the ones behind all of these false flag events that are blamed on Middle Easterners, specifically those of the Muslim faith.
Yeah, and it's so astonishing to see the role the media has played in this. Like, to me, the eye-opener was that series on YouTube called September Clues, which did an analysis of all the major media, and you just see all the mistakes they made. Like nose out shot of the airplane, and it's riddled with mistakes. You just see the whole thing was completely fraudulent. They help stage these events. They don't report news. They help stage it. It's like a soap opera.
Yes. I received an email from one of my listeners, a devoted listener who has taken it upon himself to communicate a scientist's analysis of what happened. This guy's supposedly a physics expert, and he's going through this discourse and formulas of temperature inversions and what caused the building to collapse. And I said, explain to me in one sentence, how is it that the BBC began broadcasting the collapse of World Trade Center number 7, Building 7, 24 minutes prior to its collapse? How did they know that both in London and New York, even with a virtual reporter standing in the foreground of the building?
I know. It's such a funny shot. It just shows you. I mean, David Hawking brings that out beautifully, how the BBC is controlled by this group he's identified as the criminal mafia behind these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're speaking of Sidley Austin.
I'm going to need to move on a little bit because I've got two guests scheduled on, and I would like to have you on. I'd like to arrange a day where I have you on and let me interview you if you would consider coming back. Even my next show, would you come on for an hour?
Yes, and I would be happy to do that, and the invitation is mutual to my show as well.
Well, I'd love to be on your show anytime. I'm available all the time. This is my full-time life activity at this time. So anytime that suits your schedule, I'd love to talk about my studies. See, too many people think all occult studies are evil, and they don't realize, we haven't realized the true side to mystical teachings and occult teachings. And what I teach is really very, it illuminates the whole idea of what consciousness is and mystical teachings. It gives a whole new perspective on it.
Yes, if I may say so, occult merely means hidden, and metaphysics means the science beyond the science.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're welcome to stay on, but I'll need to move ahead, but I can open it up to you at times to comment on our listener, or
please.
Do you want to just leave it today and be back next week, or what?
No, please do that. I'll just mute myself, and when you bring me on, when you want to involve me, I'll just hit the mute button. How's that?
Great. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Don. Okay. Thanks for calling in and being a part of this, Don.
You're more than welcome.
Okay. So in the background, I haven't even introduced my co-host here, Jim, in from Toronto. How are you, Jim?
I'm not here.
You're muted. Okay. We're going to have to just move ahead, Jim. You're there in the background too. And I think we have our next guest on, Ken Fernandez. Ken, are you there?
Yeah, I am. The phone is giving me a lot of trouble though, so you may have to ring me back every so often because this thing is going to peter out.
Okay. I'm sorry. I've gotten a little bit behind in schedule, but I'm most pleased that you were able to attend today. Now, Ken, you're the legal chair for the Canadian Action Party, which is the only truth party in Canada, federal political party. And I saw an article you had written talking about the threats to Montreal at this time because of what is this group that took over the security of the Montreal subway lines and such?
Well, first of all, let me say that the company is known as Verint. It is a subsidiary of a company known as Comverse. And it's from the research that we were able to glean from both Bloomberg News and from its own web.
Okay, I think we lost Ken. Ken, we lost you? This happened today when I tried to call Ken on the phone, so there's interference at this level. Don, I was listening to your show last night, and I lost it at some point. I understand you had interference in your show last night. Is Don there? Oh, okay. Jim, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess it's just you and I.
Thank you. Hello?
Oh, Ken?
Yeah, I'll, you know, I'm having a lot of trouble with my phone, and so it will keep on petering out, and your associate there will have to call me back when that happens. So I do apologize for the inconvenience.
Okay, yeah, go. Please just pick up where you were, Ken. Ken? Oh, I guess we lost him again. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
No problem with my phone.
Wow, crazy days upon us.
Yeah, well, I have a very different perspective on a lot of the things that you... I wouldn't disagree with a lot of the things you're saying, but I see them in a very different perspective on a whole variety of levels. I mean, I don't really think... I don't get what's so important about 2012. I also have a big problem with the fact that, you know, like, if you're imposing a date like that, it's like, if this conspiracy, if things are as bad as you say they are, I don't see how we're really going to get out of this in 3 years. I mean, I think the larger picture is you try to work along and you try to understand things and you try to engage people and discuss these things with people and bring information, which is what we're doing. But as I say, it seems very arbitrary to me to say that 2012 is some sort of significant point. I mean, I don't see things historically in that way at all, and I think that I think that history teaches us that my perspective on things is this is going on a lot longer than 100 years, and it's certainly things have taken an incredible turn for the worse in many ways because of the level of technology that we have, and in the same way, they've taken a turn for the better in the sense of the internet and technology provides the capacity for people to communicate on a much, more intense and much easier way than previously. Like, I've been reading this book about the original dissenting researchers on the Kennedy assassination. These are people in the 60s who challenged the official version. And I was thinking, even in those days, it's even hard for people to photocopy material, because this wasn't the way to reproduce information and to communicate. Long-distance telephone calls were expensive. There was no internet. It was a very, very different situation. And I think that had this happened today, I think that there would have been an overwhelming reaction to the lies of the Kennedy assassination. I read something today which is really interesting in regard to that, which I think is totally applicable to 9/11, and the 9/11 Commission and the Warren Commission, and one of the researchers said, well, the only way to believe the Warren Commission is to not have read it.
the 9/11 omission report.
Because the Warren Commission was really actually quite fantastic in the sense that, there was a synopsis which was referred to the conclusions and the extrapolation of all the information, but it was 26 volumes, and in the 26 volumes, all the evidence which undermined the conclusions was right there. Not all of it, but tons of it. So many contradictions in the actual evidence. And I would say that, if you read David Ray Griffin and some of the people who, he calls the 9/11 Commission, the whatever number of pages it is, lie, and his book, The 9/11 Commission, Omissions and Distortions, is really, really good. But it's the information is there for any intelligent person, an open-minded person, to read it and come away with a completely skeptical viewpoint it's just so obvious that the official version is a lie.
Well, I think we are in a new era. As you say, it's the internet, and it's these truthers around the world who have kind of been putting it together, and it's just come together as a pattern more and more. I think we had someone come in and join us. Is that Ken again? No, is Don Nikoloff there?
This is David Hawkins. Am I speaking?
Oh, no, David Hawking. Let me just introduce you, please, sir.
Surely.
We'll move on. And, Jim, just to respond a little bit to what you say, I wouldn't ask you to believe that 2012 is a significant date. And that was what I felt and was kind of semi-revealed to me almost as I experienced what I went through. So that formed in my mind that there was going to be some resolution of this one way or the other by that date. And this, it was 2 years ago this occurred to me. So at that time it was like there were 6 years. And we're either going to have a new world psychiatric disorder or else we're going to have really a new age of abundance and wealth for us all in our sovereign countries. But anyway, we don't know, and we certainly live in a chaotic time. Okay, so I'm going to move on to my next guest here, and this is someone I heard on Don Nikoloff's show, Evident Footprints. And this man is a forensic economist, and he has a level of understanding of 9/11 and numerous other criminal acts being done through our society. And his analysis takes everything, in my view, to a whole other level of what is commonly understood in looking at the underlying criminal networks and cartels underlying what's happening. And he has a website. One of his websites is www.drsherlock, as in Sherlock Holmes.
Captain Sherlock, Charles.
Captain Sherlock. Thanks, David. Sherlock.com. And this is one of the most remarkable researchers. I've only myself begun to tap into his research because one needs time to assimilate it and to grasp the horror. He takes the horror to a new level. This is really another of those men or women in our society who is having the courage and has the integrity to stand forward and to help solve this terrible situation that we're in on this planet. Well, thank you very much, David, for willing to be a guest today.
It's a pleasure, Christopher. And incidentally, with your name, Christopher Holmes, and our website, Sherlock, Captain Sherlock, we're obviously made, it's a marriage made in heaven.
Yeah, it's funny, when I had the revelations, I thought I was like the Sherlock Holmes of 9/11. And there was a famous movie about Sherlock Holmes, and I think it starred Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Christopher Plummer was my godfather at one point. He was married to my godmother in England. So it's funny, I have always had that identification with Sherlock Holmes. But I think you're the real Sherlock Holmes here, David.
Well, you're very kind.
And why don't you just kind of take it from where you'd like, David, and maybe, you know, as a forensic psychologist, explain your method first, and then let's go into 9/11, but then let's move on to other areas you've investigated.
Well, thank you, Christopher. It's a great pleasure to be on your show. I think the background that I bring to this is I'm an engineer by training, and I used to do troubleshooting in the international oil industry, and as a young person, I loved Agatha Christie mysteries and the Sherlock Holmes stories. And what I abstracted from that in my professional education and working around the world is that whenever a major crime or incident happens, you know, whether it's the raid on Mumbai of Thanksgiving Day last year or this recent attack on the cricketers in Pakistan, we should never, ever jump to the conclusion that the people responsible were those that we like least. I mean, that is not a proper forensic approach.
Yeah, or the ones the media tell you within 10 minutes did it?
Exactly. Like on 911, within 10 minutes, we all heard this name, Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
What the media didn't tell you on 9/11 was that there was a war game going on between Canada and the United States where the Al-Qaeda actors were participating in simulated hijackings of planes that had been illegally modified. And so there was no surprise that the character Osama bin Laden should emerge because he was the principal character in the war game that preceded the war games of 9/11 on the 1st of June of 2001. So we have pictures, and that war game was called Amalgam Virgo, and the red attack team out of Canada, actually out of Quebec, was led by an actor who looks suspiciously like Osama bin Laden. So there was no surprise.
Wow.
So the important thing, I believe, And there's a famous French mathematician in the 14th or 15th century. His name was Blaise Pascal. And he said, we have a moral obligation to think hard. You know, I taught my son when he was very young that we have a moral obligation to think hard. And I look at my peers and my colleagues. I'm a British and a Canadian citizen. And horrifically, Christopher, there's hundreds of thousands of people going to university and disengaging their brains.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a travesty.
I had 12 years at York University until I was driven out because of my interest in mystical and occult studies, and I could see that at the university, that people weren't what was being taught there. It's like Gurdjieff calls it, all the rubbish accumulated through centuries in human mentation.
Right.
Like, it's so much of it, it's just all rubbish. And really, the essential things about history, philosophy, science, religion have been hidden from people.
Well, the Age of Enlightenment. But anyway, going back to I think it was Sherlock Holmes who said something to the effect, once you've excluded the impossible, what remains, no matter how improbable, is the truth, right? So there are various impossible things on 911. For example, if you are a low-time Muslim pilot who can't even fly a Cessna, you cannot execute a maneuver that comes with a weapon that is flying at 540 miles an hour at 7,000 feet that does a tight bank descending pivoted turn, 270 degrees, levels off over the Pentagon lawn at 10 feet elevation and takes out the U.S. Naval Command Center in the Pentagon
Yeah, and after folding its wings in to fit into a 14-foot hole.
Correct. And basically interrupting the chain of command between the President of the United States, who happens to be a very capable fighter pilot for the Texas Air National Guard, who has been parked very carefully in an area reading a goat story to some children.
Yeah.
Right? Who, had he been in charge of the defenses in that war game, would very early on have seen the signs that this was a war game that had been programmed to go real.
Yeah.
Right. So,
well, I guess you see these people like Bush essentially as puppets.
No, he was a victim, right? And the media has spun him as a perpetrator. Anyway, let me just back up because I think it's very important. We've got an hour, have we, Christopher?
Yeah, we have, and no commercials.
Okay, let me race along a bit and stop me where I go.
Okay.
Because I think what I'm trying to do in this 1 hour, and I urge people to go to CaptainSherlock.com because there they can see a wealth of material. There's three or four books and there's some DVDs, and it's laid out, we think, in a very attractive fashion. But
and also excellent DVDs which can be downloaded free.
Yes, that's right. And did you actually get the time to look at that Pattern of the Times?
I looked at one of them, yeah, but it was so much. I need time to assimilate your work,
okay.
And I hope to have you on again in the future when I've had more time to review your work.
Anyway, going back to the forensic approach is, I, as an engineer, if I look at an incident like 911, I don't worry about who might have done it or why they might have done it. My first concern is, what were the weapons used that created the effects, a la Sherlock Holmes, which would allow us from the clues to re-engineer or reverse-engineer the maneuvers that were executed to, for example, vaporize a plane or a human body, right? And this is very significant. I have a background, amongst others, in explosives. I used to be employed, with Schlumberger, a big French company in the oil industry for data exploration, putting out oil fires. And, you know, it's extremely difficult to vaporize an oil rig, even when there's a fire burning, because the gas has caught fire. Because the problem with a gas fire or a fuel fire or a diesel fire or a fire driven by plastics or paper, it doesn't burn hot enough to melt steel.
Yeah, now, which you burns at thousands of degrees.
Well,
I guess the kerosene from the jet fuel burns at, like, is it 600 or 1200?
Well, it depends on the amount of oxygen around. So if you see a black smoke, that means it's incomplete combustion, means you've probably got a temperature of 600 degrees Fahrenheit, right?
Yeah, like you really saw in the towers, because there was tons of black smoke.
Right, so the temperature of those fires was cool, I mean, in terms of pyrotechnics. The melting point of steel is 2800 degrees Fahrenheit. So when building number 7 came down in its own footprint at 520. And what the media is not telling you, or not emphasizing, is inside that building, on floors 11, 12, and 13, there were the Securities and Exchange Commission files on all the hedge fund frauds on the stock market.
Yeah.
So they had to destroy those records, because otherwise they would have picked off Madoff, you know, this guy who's been ripping off people for decades, probably since the late 60s.
And
so there was
a move
afoot to destroy building number 7 to contain the records of the manipulations on the stock market, where they had already written the bailout agreement that was released in November of last year, which was, if you recollect, I think 740 pages long. So what that means is, to write a document 740 pages to intervene in the markets and basically replace Western capitalism, equity investments, with loans laundered through the U.S. Treasury by the mob, it takes a lot of preparation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so they planned these things years ahead.
They did. And I believe they started planning it in earnest in 1989. And again, fast forward. So what we see on 9/11 is a whole bunch of crimes that are more properly analyzed, I believe, as insurance frauds.
Okay.
So, for example, building numbers 1 and 2, North and South Towers, in between being sold by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey sometime, I think, in June, and bought by Larry Silverstein, someone doubled the insurance. on those two towers, such that if they both came down in the same event, there was an extra $2 or $3 billion to be made to be kicked back to the people who brought them down.
Yeah, didn't he walk out with $6 billion from his settlement?
No, he didn't. It was the mortgage broker that arranged the loans, of which Larry Silverstein put up a small percentage, about 10 or 5%, where the mortgage broker doubled the insurance.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And the mortgage broker on the Twin Towers was General Motors Acceptance Corporation.
Oh.
Well. Right? And the insurance policy that was taken out that made a lot of money, that has convinced me and my colleagues that this was an insurance fraud, were a cartel of insurance companies. One of them was the Travelers Insurance Company, which was part of Citigroup, which was created or structured by Robert Rubin, the Clinton Treasury Secretary. Right? So he is, I believe, a knowledgeable participant in the attack of 9-1-1. Because they made a claim afterwards that this was a double occurrence, that is, two non-related terrorist attacks on both towers, for which they had taken out reinsurance both on the buildings and the people in the buildings at the time they were brought down.
Yeah.
Now, on the 17th of September 2001, 6 days after the event, Christopher, Equitable Life, which was then owned by AXA, which is controlled by the Desmarais family out of Montreal, opened an emergency payment center in the AXA Gallery in New York, where they invited the spouses and families of the victims, including 343 firefighters, to come to the office and provide the death certificates.
Well,
are you with me?
I'm not sure I understand.
Right. Well, when you hand over the death certificates to the insurance company then pays go-away money to the people, $500,000 or whatever it is, so they can go away and have the next month's rent paid for.
So those monies were given to the victims?
So money was given, and in my book this is go-away money, because then they took the 343 death certificates, they put them in a group, and then in the insurance industry, whenever an insurer writes insurance against a particular event, they need to protect themselves in case that event is so extreme, it wipes out all the investors in the insurance company.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So what the insurance company investors can do is they can reinsure themselves so that they only pick up a certain amount of the risk.
Oh, yeah.
So what they do is that they go and they buy insurance, let's say, on against the possibility that more than 300 firefighters are killed in any one accident.
Wow.
Except then, they buy insurance at $10 million per firefighter.
Yeah.
So the difference, the profit you can make by ambushing firefighters inside the building and killing them in large numbers could be as much as $3.43 billion.
Wow.
Versus $300 million paid out as go-away money.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. So the insurance company that did that scam, we allege, is AXA Equitable Life, controlled out of Montreal by Paul Desmarais and his children.
Wow, my goodness.
Wow. Right? Now, the law firm that put that together, which is basically, have you heard of this word tontine?
Yes, from your work.
Okay, well, I had heard of it way, way back because there were films and mystery stories and written about a tontine, but essentially it was something that was invented in the 17th century by a Neapolitan banker, Lorenzo Tonti, and he was invited at the Sun King's court to developed this system to finance military expeditions. And essentially, well, it became known as the tontine. The idea is, if you want to finance a military expedition, you invite a bunch of people to put some money into an annuity system called a tontine. And that annuity system is then invested by loans to maybe finance the expedition or finance the special weapon for that expedition, such that it generates money, principal and debt repayments or whatever it is, that comes back into the tontine common pool of assets, and then you pay an annuity to the members of the tontine, so once a year they get a check, but any profits are retained in the tontine ultimately, as the people die off, there is a what is known as the sole survivor. And the sole survivor has the rights to the common pool of assets in the Tonti.
You mean they play such a sick game among themselves, even betting on their own lives?
Well, you're very sharp. You see the danger. It's what's called a moral hazard.
Yeah.
Because you could go into that in naively or innocently, or whatever you like to call it, not intending to kill your fellow Tontine members, and then once you're in, you realize that if you don't kill them, they're going to kill you.
Wow.
You see the point?
Yeah.
So that was a 17th century model, and then it bubbled away for a couple of centuries, and then in 1868, 140 years ago, Christopher, it was introduced into the United States by Equitable Life.
Wow.
Assurance company
of
the United States. Just 3 years before the Great Fire of Chicago. And back in 1868, the law firm that structured these Tontine agreements was Sidley Austin of Chicago.
Well, the same one that Michelle and Barack Obama have been involved.
Got it. You've got it. The thread, and again, I just can't thank you enough for this opportunity, the thread, and it's not David Hawkins or Captain Sherlock talking, what we're really saying is this criminal model of Tontine life insurance has been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And it's been perfected in the United States, starting in 1868, by two companies that participated in the 9-1-1 attack. Equitable Life in its New York office, at the AXA Gallery, where the checks were handed out on 9/11.
Wow.
You see the thread?
Yeah.
So the beauty of it is, it's nothing to do with the left or the right. It's got everything to do with criminal organization. You with me?
Yeah. Okay, you finish up, David, and then we'll open it to Don when we...
Okay, all right. So I keep going. So the Tontines were banned in the United States in 1906 after the Armstrong Committee pointed out what had by then built the world's largest insurance company, life insurance company, Equitable Life of the United States. It was banned in 1906 because of that moral hazard. What they were finding is that the members of the Tontine were starting to provide predatory loans to people with the common pool of assets, collect what is known as odious debts by extortion, and finance contract killing to eliminate rivals to the common pool of assets in the Tontine.
Wow.
Right? So it was banned in 1906, so the prime user of the Tontine insurance scam, Equitable Life, with its offices in New York, and the prime law firm that was building and structuring the agreements and taking care of the estate of the people who had died, Sidley Austin of Chicago, they decided that they would start the Tontine schemes in its modern form, if you will, outside the United States, where it hadn't been banned. So they developed it with the Royal Bank of Canada, BNP Paribas of France, and the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, which was heavily involved in the opium trade, if you remember, in London.
Oh, yeah.
So the modern Tontine schemes were born, I would argue, in 1906, but the system has basically unchanged since the 17th century.
Wow. And they can use that same pattern and benefit from it through all kinds of accidents and mishaps, and like it's a pattern that allows to be applied to, you know, downing an airplane, sinking a ferry, doing any kind of criminal act.
Right. So going back to our research, is what I noticed with the most recent research is I started to go back and look for areas where these Tontine investors could make what you would now call unlawful debt or predatory loans to people. And you know, the greatest opportunity of lending money to countries or sovereign governments is at the time of the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
You see, because, for example, I'm here in British Columbia, and I'm the leader of the Reform Party of British Columbia, and we have been suckered with $6 billion worth of debt for these useless Olympic projects.
Wow.
For a 16-day jockfest where there's no accounting, in what I allege to be our Tontine life insurance schemes, meaning when these people come and knock on the door and say, we want you to pay us back, this is the provincial government or the city government, you got to pay us back for the money we lent you to build the RAV line from the airport to downtown, or the Olympic Village, all right, or the road widening to Whistler. If you don't pay us back, you have a number of people inside your government, municipal government or provincial government or federal government, who are members of a Tontine that will just arrange for you to have a little accident.
Yeah.
Right? In order, this is racketeering, Christopher.
Yeah, it is.
Now, the problem is, what they understood is, I believe, the First World War, the Armenian genocide, where about 1 million Catholics were slaughtered, they were using the Tontine insurance model to get one Catholic to kill another, aided and abetted by Muslims, but not necessarily driven by the Muslims, driven by the people inside the Catholic community who wanted to be the sole survivors of a Tontine insurance scheme.
Wow.
And the insurance company, Christopher, that sold life insurance to the Armenian Catholics that were massacred in 1917 was Equitable Life of New York.
Wow.
Fast forward to the Second World War with the Holocaust. There was a young man, a Jew in Hungary, 14 years old, called George Soros.
Really?
Who was working with his father on selling passports to Jews who would survive, provided they paid enough money by way of protection.
Ah.
If they didn't, those members of the Jews, which I allege George Soros was one, members of the Tontine, were arranging to kill their rivals in order to be the sole survivor.
Wow.
So George Soros is a sole survivor, we allege, of a Tontine scheme that dates back to the Second World War and the Holocaust.
Wow. Wow.
And he's the guy who bankrolled Obama and Hillary Clinton.
Really? Wow.
So you see how it fits?
Yeah, it's horrifying. It's so inconceivable. It's beyond, like, just most people don't think in these kinds of terms. I mean, it's like J. Edgar Hoover says, it's a conspiracy so monstrous people just can't believe it could exist.
Right, but the argument, of course, is, it's a lot simpler to accept it's an insurance fraud than some guy in a cave in Afghanistan should put together a series of maneuvers that bypass the world's most powerful air force.
Oh, that's so obviously a complete fraud. Like, it's so obvious the buildings were blown up. I mean,
but
you have all
isn't that more incredible than a sophisticated insurance fraud? So why should we not believe in the sophisticated insurance fraud because it sounds too horrible? And we should believe in that some guy in a cave, who's actually been an ally of the United States for years, would be responsible for an attack because, remember, Osama bin Laden was part of the ACTA team in the war game on the 1st of June, simulating an attack on America where both the red team and the blue team players believed that the outcome would be benign, i.e. they would have learned how to handle that kind of hijacking.
Yeah. Well, I think one point that's important here is that, like, you look at an event like 9/11, there's not simply one cause. Like, I mean, even you pointed to that. Like, building number 7, the reason they wanted that down was because of all the FBI and the securities.
Well, the evidence of the fraud
in
the Securities and Exchange Commission.
And they steal the billion of gold out from under the towers. Like, there's multiple simultaneous motives, but the life scheme.
But they're all criminal motives.
Yes, exactly.
They're not political motives.
They did want an excuse for the war because these people own the war industry, so they make billions through that, and they make billions through the insurance scheme. And it's a multiple motive simultaneously. Like, I think often people think, oh, there's got to be one clear kind of motive, but it's not like that. They coordinate a whole bunch of schemes at the same time.
Okay, let me just come to how you coordinate these Tontines, you see. So in 1991, there was a let me back up here. So we both now, I think, and hopefully the listeners will accept, that the key players in the Tontine, you need a law firm that is very sophisticated at putting together these kind of agreements, which relate to last will and testaments, of the handing off of assets to the next generation. And that firm is Sidley Austin of Chicago. You need an insurance company that is global in reach, and AXA Equitable Life is now the world's largest life insurance company, basically because it's been killing the competition. Okay?
Yeah.
And then you need an accounting firm, right? And the world's largest accounting firm that was a party to this is KPMG.
KPMG.
Right.
Where's that out of?
KPMG is out of the canton of Zug in Switzerland.
Oh.
Right?
Really, offshore bankers.
Right. Now, yeah. On February of 2001, KPMG Consulting, which is an expert in putting together what are known as escrow agreements, I allege, for Tontine killing,
mm-hmm.
had a initial public offering on the New York markets, right, arranged by Sidley Austin, with $1 billion of capital injected by Cisco, which is the world's largest manufacturer and supplier of virtual private networking and intranet switching and router gear,
mm-hmm.
which by 2001 had built a virtual Pentagon, meaning that the command signals historically coming out of the Pentagon could be bypassed if you had access to the right software and encryption codes.
And they would have access to what was being viewed at the Pentagon, like they
absolutely
would reflect it, and they could interact with that.
And that was what was being built in Wedge 1 of the Pentagon, which was taken out by the missile that took out the U.S. Naval Command Center.
Oh, yeah.
So on the morning of 9/11, the company that was building or upgrading the U.S. Naval Command Center was a company called AMEC, which is a British company, but to all intents and purposes, it's controlled by the Demeray family out of Quebec. They were upgrading that system, the U.S. Naval Command Center, the Pentagon, and had installed the bypass encryption codes so that if the command center was taken out, the command of the United States Navy would be transferred to NATO.
Oh.
And Canadian steamship lines.
Wow.
Controlled
Paul
by Martin's Paul Martin.
Canadian steamship lines.
Well, when you think about it, logically, if you want an alias fleet, right, why wouldn't you use the bulk unloaders of Paul Martin's fleet, which incidentally he never owned because he borrowed the money from Demeray to acquire?
Oh.
You see, you don't own the asset if you borrow the money from the bank to buy the asset. The bank owns the asset.
Oh, yeah, I see.
You see my point?
Yeah.
So if the bank, which is affiliated with AXA Equitable, which is BNP Paribas, BNP Paribas was running the UN oil for food scam.
Wow.
With assistance from Saddam's intelligence service. So Saddam was behind 911.
He was really laundering
the money through BNP Paribas' account in New York in the same building where the checks were handed out to the dead firefighters' families.
Oh, wow. Goodness.
Am I overwhelming you, or...?
Well, it would take me time to, I would need to hear it again and study it again, but I grasp it more and more as I mean, your work is not something someone's going to easily grasp.
No, but just think of it in terms of an insurance fraud where if I have borrowed money to build a barn and I can't pay it back, right, another way of getting that money back from the lender's point of view is arrange for that barn to have a big insurance policy written on it and then burn it down.
Yeah, no, I grasp the basic theme of what you're saying.
That's the crime.
Yeah.
If I lend money to someone and they can't pay me back, I force them to take a life insurance to secure the loan.
Yeah.
And then I say to them, you got a choice. You either pay the protection money, which is either the debt and the interest, or the carbon tax. That's what we're coming to, of course. Or we'll arrange for you to be killed. And then your assets will be transferred into the common pool for the people who survive.
Wow.
Now, in 1984 to 1988, they took on board at Sidley Austin in Chicago the woman who had built the Weathermen terrorist underground movement that was recognized as a nationwide revolutionary network to bomb and to kill.
The Weathermen, yeah.
The Weathermen. The woman's name is Bernadine Dorn.
Oh, yeah.
She was taken into the Sidley Austin law firm in Chicago to teach the interns this Tontine insurance model scam.
Yeah.
So every intern more particularly every female intern that went into that building and was trained there from 1984 to 1980 was taught how to build a Tontine insurance scam.
Wow.
In 1988, her last student or last intern was a woman by the name of Michelle LaVaughn Robinson. And Michelle LaVaughn Robinson was then given the job by Sidley Austin of teaching the women interns how to build Tontine insurance frauds.
Wow.
And stay undetected, right?
Yeah.
Michelle LaVaughn Robinson left the firm in 1991. We think she was fired. Her law license was withdrawn, and she married Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so for 7 years, the Sidley Austin law firm developed and refined an online or virtual Tontine system where they could arrange to kill the members selectively using the encryption systems such that there would be one, I don't know if you've ever seen the TV series, sole survivor.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the sole survivor of that 7 years of indoctrination was Michelle Obama.
Wow.
Who has now got into the White House.
Yeah, wow.
Where her charismatic cipher of a husband, who never met a payroll in his life and has never done anything, appears to be the alien president of the United States, because his real name is not Barack Hussein Obama, it's Barry Swatero, which is taken from his stepfather, who is an Indonesian and a Muslim.
Wow, really?
So in 1981, and you can, you know, cross-check that by Googling, if you Google for Obama 1981 Pakistan, you'll find that Obama went on a hunting trip in 1981 where his mother, a card-carrying communist, was working, spent 5 years in a Lahore hotel raising money for Al-Qaeda terrorist groups. In 1981, Barry Swatero, on an Indonesian passport, went on a hunting trip 200 miles south of Quetta in eastern Pakistan with a guy by the name of Osama bin Laden.
Holy fuck.
And Osama bin Laden changed his name to come into the United States, where he was hired by the CIA to bring Stinger missiles into Afghanistan to kick out the Soviets. His name in the United States was Tim Osmond, Osmond.
Wow.
When Barry Swatero came into the United States in 1981 after the end of his holiday, he needed a new legend, right, to get street credibility in Chicago, so he became Barack Hussein Obama.
Wow.
And he'd already been groomed and selected in 1981, we think, to be the United States president.
Yeah, these people certainly scheme like decades ahead like that. Like it's a conspiracy so monstrous, it's beyond most people who could imagine that people could be so devious and such.
Right.
I want to, just for a moment, Don's come back in. Don, did you have any comment or question you'd like to share at this point?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say hello to David.
Hello, Don.
And commend his research, and I have to agree with 99.9% of what he said, and I'm not in any way demeaning your research. In fact, I want to support what you're describing by describing, as I previously mentioned, Dr. Holmes, how his research basically collides with mine, and
yeah.
I had been researching the court corruption around the United States and came across a particular private account that's being run out of Maricopa County, Arizona, in the recorder's office. And there are, basically it's the Sucato crime family that runs that operation. It's money laundering in other words, they're turning real estate transactions out of the money that's pilfered out of the court system, bankruptcy courts, domestic relations, probate, and in specificity, child protective services. They are criminally impoverishing people, and the model for this is taking place in, guess where? Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Now, So it smacks head on with what David's talking about, and it would have to be run by the same people. The real estate or the mortgage fraud that has occurred as a result of these illegal pure trusts that the judges, attorneys, psychologists, court-appointed representatives will say, because they come from all walks of life, anything they can do to perpetrate the fraud that's criminally impoverishing these families that think they're entering into a forum where they're going to achieve some modicum of justice, when in reality it doesn't matter if they're a plaintiff or defendant in a trial, they're going to go after the family member or the ex-partner or even the child, the benefactor of large sums of money. Whoever has the most money becomes the victim. And you will fight to get your kids back, or you will fight to stop a harassment from an ex-spouse or to enforce a divorce decree. And this is just another aspect of what David's describing. Now, through my research, I discovered Barack Obama's aliases, and there were hundreds, if not thousands, of them now. And they're attached to real estate transactions. I can attach his so-called grandparents, who are not his grandparents, who were CIA Mossad agents going back to 1947 in Oklahoma City. And I'm speaking about the Dunhams. Specifically, Stanley Armour and Madeline Lee Payne Dunham worked for the Rockefeller family and were CIA agents. There's a CIA dossier at Boeing Aircraft. Now, as far back as 1947, there is evidence.
If I could just say, Madeline Dunham worked on the Boeing production line.
Yes, yes,
in
she
Washington
did.
State, and she would go on to become the vice president of the Bank of Hawaii, where she was in charge of escrow, which is basically setting up these Tontine trusts
and mortgages,
which financed his campaign.
Yes, yes, and also the mortgages too. So there's
and
a conflict of interest.
Don, the guys who invented the commercial mortgage-backed security market and the residential mortgage-backed securities, which basically secures a loan against the life of the borrower, and what they were doing is pumping this money into the ghetto where there was no hope of the people repaying it. Basically, you ended up owning those people. And they could work it off by dying, i.e. through the insurance, or they could work it off by killing, i.e. where the lender would collect the money from someone else's insurance. So the people who invented that was Sidley Austin of Chicago.
Yes. Wow. Yes, I agree with that.
In the
now, if I can make one more point here. The Buffalo plane crash, which my research began live on radio on my Evident Footprint show with Ken Adachi as a guest the night of the crash, indicated to me that the witnesses were actually members of the hit squads.
Yes, and you know who built the avionics?
De Havilland.
No, it was Thales, the French weapons supplier to Saddam Hussein for Bombardier, because that's a turboprop made by Bombardier. And Bombardier's legal counselors for its debt, which is something like $10 billion at Bombardier Capital, is Sidley Austin. So Sidley Austin had the opportunity to modify those planes that were bought with loan money through Tontines such that they could be flown in any simulated fashion, including as though they were icing up.
Yes.
So you can fly a plane through the autopilot, and that's what Sidley Austin was doing, and you recover money through what are known as abusive tax shelters. So Sidley Austin and KPMG pioneered the development of Tontine insurance scams under tax shelters described with names like Son of Boss and Homer and Cobra, and those tax shelters were ruled abusive by the IRS, and KPMG paid a $456 million fine, and Sidley Austin paid a $50 million fine. So Sidley Austin, KPMG, are the guys who invented the modern Tontine insurance scam under abusive tax shelters, where the problem here, Don, is entrapment. You see, I'm an optimist about human nature. I think a huge number of people went into these tax shelters in good faith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But once you're inside, you discover you're part of a Tontine where there's one sole survivor. who walks away with everything, and you're not the sole survivor like the Michelle Obama. You're dead.
Yes. Now, there's an aspect to what you're talking about here, which I think you'll find interesting. KPMG in Zug, Switzerland, happens to be the home of Mark Rich.
That's right.
Okay. Mark Rich goes all the way back to the Wantagate scandal.
Right.
And he's working both for the Bushes and was pardoned by the Clintons, which shows the complicity between the Bushes and the Clintons in Wantagate.
I would argue the important thing is, again, there's a tendency to say Bush did it. Bush didn't do it. The way to get these people is to go through the mechanism that was developed under the Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization Statute of 1970. You first of all, you look to see if you can identify an organization that has organized crime characteristics, continuity in time, and a certain MO. Now, what we've done, well, in a sense, we haven't done it. We've just uncovered something that's been done for 140 years, at least, is the organization is an organization of Tontine life insurance scams connected online through Cisco.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, the next step is, if you can get into court, and whether that's a criminal court and you're looking in murder for hire terms, or a civil court where you're looking for wrongful death and a civil claim of treble damages, the next step in the court is to say, after you've proven that there is a racketeering influence corrupt organization, to prove these people are associated with it.
Yes, yes. I follow
your... It's not to say it's the Bush or the Clintons.
No.
It's to say, in effect, Don, your job and my job and Christopher's job is not to prove that Bush did it or didn't do it. It's to prove, A, there's a racketeering organization, and B, to prove that these people are associated with it, in which case you can haul them into court. And in the case of a criminal court, for example, you don't have to prove that an individual pulled the gun or ignited the incendiaries that vaporized the plane. All you have to prove is that they are a member of an organization that did that, and then they suffer the same penalty as the guy who pushed the button, which is a death sentence.
Yeah. I follow what you're saying. I'm referring to this in terms of tracking where the money's going. In other words, when it keeps going into the same accounts, and I named a few of the people, but obviously there are many more, and these are primarily offshore accounts.
Well, you know, let me just jump in there, Don. There are three accounts set up under the Department of Justice by Field McConnell's sister, Christine Moss. Field McConnell is the colleague who pays me. She was number four at the Department of Justice during the Waco. She launched the Conair, or the Justice Prisoner and Alien Transportation System arrangement, in 1995. Mm-hmm. At about the time the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms people in the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City were onto this racket.
Oh. So that was one of the reasons for the bombing of the Oklahoma.
That's why they blew it up. It was a warning to those people to lay off the fact that Sidley Austin and Bombardier were installing autopilots and explosives inside planes that were then being sold through these tax shelters.
Wow, my goodness. Like I say, it just gets more and more horrible.
But just think about it, folks. If we can truly say, as humbly as we will, none of us are a genius, we're all capable of doing, the people who put this together are not smarter than you, Don, or you, Christopher.
Yeah.
Right? Therefore, whatever it is they're doing, if it's too complicated for us to understand, that's not what they're doing. It's got to be simple enough for them to do, and the moment it's simple enough for them to do, it's simple enough for us to understand.
Yeah.
Very important, that.
I do want to move on to a couple other areas, and I know we only have 20 minutes left here. But so just to try to move us along a little bit to another direction. Firstly, do you, David, have some? You've filed a lawsuit against Global Guardian, have you?
Yes. So on the Captain Sherlock website, if I can just are you near your computer? Are you able to?
Yes.
Okay. At the Captain Sherlock website, you'll see the bottom left, it's got Visit Hawks Cafe. Mm-hmm. If you can put your cursor into that panel, Visit Hawks Cafe, you'll see, if you scroll down to Hawks Cafe versus the Global Guardians 911 lawsuit, you'll see a description of who we filed it against and a little bit of background there. This was filed on May the 1st, 2007 by Field McConnell in the Fargo courthouse. And it's a preamble for, I'm just reading from it, a constitutional remedy to private equity racketeering and two-party corruption in Global Guardian 911. Now, the reason we call it that, and it took me a long time to recognize what the name of these people should be, this was the name they gave to the war game.
Oh, yeah, Global Guardian. Yeah.
So why wouldn't you call the racketeering influence and corrupt organization the same name as they gave themselves?
Yeah. So that was submitted 2 years ago, and what's happened? Is it just, I mean, isn't the judiciary just as corrupted as...
Yeah, it is, but you see, the argument that I make with Field is the greatest and most powerful court that we have is the Court of Public Opinion.
Yeah.
Now, this has been filed, it has a number, it hasn't been served, but at any time, for example, if you go through the list of names, and just very briefly, some of the names that jump out include Mohammed Al-Zaibak, who bought an interest in McDonald debt by the Richmond, British Columbia, and developed or financed the development of three of the networks used on 911. He's a Syrian citizen, educated at the University of Alexandria in Egypt, on which there has been no due diligence. Now, Mohammed Al-Zaibak has been given, incredibly, private custody of Canada's hydrographic charts. So when you're moving your drugs and weapons along the coastline, and British Columbia is now run by gang bosses, we have a $7 billion a year marijuana trade that is being used to finance these contract killings. You've got a guy who can bring in, were you aware they're using submarines now to move drugs?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Right. Well, Mohammed Al-Zaibak has been given the hydrographic charts right across, both coasts for the North American continent to bring the weapons and the drugs in.
Wow.
You've got Laurent Beaudoin, who's a Bombardier boss, George Herbert Walker Bush, Jean Chrétien, William Jefferson Clinton. Now, these names might sound like scattergun, but every one of them has been very carefully researched. We can prove they are associated with the Global Guardians.
Wow.
Including Field McConnell's sister.
Yeah. Do you send your information and such to the RCMP?
Yes, everywhere. It goes everywhere.
Do?
Huh?
You do? And do they ever? Well, how do they respond to
you? Well, let me tell you, and again, perhaps I'm being naive, I think the Obamas and their gangster friends are in desperate trouble because we've been doing this now for nearly 2 years, and you see, there's a principle in English law called equity, and there's a concept, equity delayed is equity denied. If I libel you, all right, and you don't defend your reputation or your name, you lose it.
Oh, yeah.
So if this was interpreted by these people who we've named as defendant as libelous, they should have responded 2 years ago.
And they were all served the documents, were
they? No, they weren't served, but there's been no attempt to hide it. We've published it. We've talked about it on the radio.
Yeah.
There is no way, including Field McConnell's sister, that these people don't know we're after them. Their silence is damning, you see, because what we've done, I think, is collectively, and the Hawks Cafe group is 1,160 people around the world, some of them more actively.
Wow.
Right, is that we have, I think, we've gone to the Court of Public Opinion, and hopefully, successfully, with your help and Don's help, we are educating the public, and the lights are going on. So what do the bad guys do when all the lights in the buildings are on? Where do they hide?
Well, they usually stage something more.
Yeah, but who would they attack? You can't attack the truth online, because the truth is everywhere and nowhere.
They can take down the internet. I guess that's the next.
Or they could take down individuals, but the point is they don't want to draw attention to these allegations, but equally they're paralyzed because they can't come into court, because in court you get discovery. So if they accuse us of libel, Yeah. They can discover everything we've said about them, and all they can need to do is go to the website and look up the Hawks Cafe, because we've got 4,000 or 5,000 pages of material, cross-reference, which has never been refuted.
Okay, so I'd like to bring you back. You've given this evidence to the RCMP.
It's been filed in the court, yes.
And the RCMP does nothing.
And we filed a search warrant, an application for search warrant. Ron Gamble, who's the president of the Reform Party of British Columbia, and myself, we filed an application for a search warrant in 2004, just after the BC legislature had been raided by the RCMP.
Oh, yeah.
And that raid was about the privatization of BC Rail and drug trafficking and money laundering through the provincial government of British Columbia.
And so did the RCMP reveal this and prosecute?
No, the application for a search warrant was turned down.
So the problem, the obstruction of justice, came from the judiciary level.
Yes, you see, but I don't waste any time on trying to get back into court. I keep, or Field McConnell and myself and the members of Hawks Cafe, we keep shooting out into the cyberspace, and we're making these statements. You know, my latest work is on the, although I've been working on it for years, is the women that were killed out at the Picton Pig Farm.
I want to come to that. I still want to come back to this. Are there any honorable men and women in the RCMP of Canada?
Of course there are. Of course there are. But
so
just, let me give you a hypothetical, right?
Okay.
If you are in a structure, a very rigid quasi-military structure, you obey the orders of your superior officers.
Yeah. But what if you know those orders are criminal, isn't it?
Right. My point is, where do you go? If you know that your superior officer has been corrupted or terrified, or entrapped.
Yeah.
Where do you go as an honorable member of the RCMP?
I guess you need to, like, be talking among fellow officers. And like, we need our people with integrity in RCMP and CSIS to take back their own forces. Like, this is terrible.
Right. And you know what? We would, for example, one of the things that we would do as a Reform Party government in British Columbia is we've now determined that the mobsters and the drug traffickers, with their proceeds of crime, have bought military-grade command and control communication systems to move their drugs through and in between the communication systems of the municipal police.
Yeah. So yeah, it filters down. I mean, they corrupt people. I mean, I guess they see who they can get, and they infiltrate departments.
Well, they also terrify people. Going back to the pig farm, you see, the Picton Pig Farm, they formed a non-profit charity in 1996, a federally registered non-profit charity. My work indicates, or our work indicates, that the accounting firm and law firm that set that up was KPMG and Sidley Austin. And what they did is, the name of the non-profit charity was the Piggy Palace Good Time Society. And
the
what
Piggy
it was set up
Palace,
to do,
sorry, the Piggy Palace,
Piggy Good, Palace Good Time Society.
My God, how disgusting.
And what they did is, they invited people to invest in the Piggy Palace Good Time Society, and they used that money to put on drunken raves, marijuana, cocaine, where women would be invited from the downtown east side to join a tontine, for which they would buy life insurance on themselves, come out to the pig farm, this is our allegation, and kill each other in snuff films.
God.
Now, you imagine...
What happened at the Picton trial? Was it made it wasn't accessible to
the
public?
He was convicted of second-degree murder because the jury could not prove, to their own satisfaction, or the prosecution could not prove, that Willie Picton, who's mentally incapacitated to a certain extent, he couldn't prove pre-planning and premeditation, meaning, in my book, the people who did do the pre-planning and premeditation are still out there.
So did the RCMP not come upon any of this? Is again,
they
were completely corrupted?
They came on lots of evidence, but the tontine, we think, included some of the prostitutes who killed each other, and some of the investors who were members of the RCMP and the Vancouver Police Pension Fund.
Yeah.
And then again, my question to these people is rhetorical. What would you do? You discover that you've benefited from the death of someone that you're supposed to protect, right? The money has been paid into your pension, and your superior officer is on the film.
on the film.
The snuff film.
Is on the snuff film.
Well, because what was happening, there were raves. You know what a rave is, a big party? Of 1,700 to 1,800 people getting free coke, free marijuana, and free alcohol. Now, I didn't lead a particularly dissipated life, but young people do things that older people don't do, right?
Yeah.
So they go to a party thinking they're going to have a little thrill of danger, etc. They're sitting in an audience, and suddenly these horrific events happen, but you're caught on film.
My God.
What do you do with the rest of your career?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, people live in fear and just shut up.
So Scott Young, who was the mayor of Port Coquitlam, he was reported, in fact, he was charged with beating up his wife, but he used to be a regular attendant at the raves.
Uh-huh.
So for all I know, he's on film, right, which is in the possession of the mobsters who staged the killing of the women, right, meaning that when there's a major infrastructure development going on in Port Coquitlam, it goes to the right people.
Okay, so once again, like, where are the RCMP? Like, is there no one that has integrity? I guess you've answered that in ways.
Well, I have, but you see, so what I'm doing on the last post that went out at Hort's Cafe, so if people go to CaptainSherlock.com and click on the icon Visit Hort's Cafe, the second line down is the Hort's Cafe Yahoo group, right? And just looking at that, we now have 1,167 members, so it's a worldwide group. And they receive the posts that we send out maybe every 2 days, of which I guess now we've been going since, let me just see, the first one went out in September of 2006, actually just after a coast-to-coast radio show where we had an audience of about 40 million
people. Oh, they met you on Coast to Coast?
Yeah, in September of 2006, on September the 11th, I think it was.
Wow, really?
So you see, for nearly 2.5 years, we've been pumping this stuff out. It's never, Christopher, been refuted.
No.
Now, what that means is they lose. Whoever we are, which means regular folks like you and me and honorable people in the RCMP, we've won because they have not replied. Equity delayed is equity denied. So,
but it's like nothing is ever done. It's like you know, the evidences are there. Like these things, I mean, it's just they have such control somehow. They've infiltrated the whole system.
They have, but they don't control. There's a famous, which American president? You can fool some of the people all of the time. All of the people some of the time. But not all of the people all of the time. Now, the fact remains is, if you come back to the theory that these people are no smarter than you or me, they've got a particular technique which has worked pretty well for 140 years, but it's a pretty clumsy technique because you actually end up killing all your talent.
Yeah.
Right? So the team that they've got as sole survivors, simply by definition, there's not a lot of them. I mean, I could argue it's Michelle Obama. Right? She came through the system. She is the sole survivor. She's in the White House. She has no protection, and she's got no friends.
Well,
so,
if I could add one word,
you don't go after Obama, Barack. He's just a flake, you know, a charismatic guy, probably who's not even an American citizen.
He never said anything, really. He just said, change, change.
Well, did you ever hear that line, we are the change that we've been waiting for? What the hell does that mean?
Well, there is a We Are Change group that kind of bring out real change.
Well,
let's turn it over for a moment to Don. I noticed we only have like 5 minutes or so. Yeah. So maybe, Don, you can make a few comments, and we'll be in touch at a later point, and I'll have you back another week. Maybe, sure. Don, some final comments from you?
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. And now, David, I agree with you 100%.
Thank you very much, Don.
Let me say this, and I'm not saying you're intentionally excluding this. You know, we're talking about murder for hire. In fact, we're talking about, in every instance, mass murder for hire, for financial gain. And we should be demanding, as Americans, as Canadians, internationally, because many people on 9/11 from around the world were murdered.
Yeah.
And And there has been no investigation, and I'm not talking about the 9/11 Commission. That was another fraud, just like the Warren Commission was after the Kennedy assassination. These people have this planned what they're going to do from, you know, years, 20, 30, 40, 50 years in advance. Like David pointed out, this has been going on for a long time. No one ever questioned this. We're at a moment in our history now where we can communicate vast amounts of information around the planet in a matter of seconds, and we should be demanding that the very laws that they created are adhered to. They are not above the law. They think they are. They act like they are, but they are not above the law.
Yeah.
And there are a lot more of us than there are of them.
And we need people like in our police and intelligence agencies and military. We need these people to obey their oaths of office and stand forth and work together in their, wherever they are. These people need to step up to the plate and serve us as citizens of our countries.
Yes.
It's disgraceful,
the history
of the CIA. They've been a terrorist organization.
Yes. Now, I might add also that many of the people supposedly killed in these plane crashes on 9/11 are still alive, and they're traceable. The media intentionally put out false information about their names, and I've been researching that since 2001, and I've got a big list of people, and it ties in with the money laundering, it ties in with the Tontine scheme that David has so eloquently described, and this is provable. These things, all this information can be added together, and if not in a court of law, at least for public scrutiny.
Oh, they could be put forth in a court of law. If you had any half-sane judge in any half-impartial court, you could prove these things. I mean, not all the levels of it. But, like, 9/11 was an inside job. Anyone who's not an idiot can see that. You know, to believe otherwise is like to believe in the Tooth Fairy or Osama bin Bugs Bunny. You know, it's ridiculous. It's obvious. There's so much evidence you could prove it in any court in the world.
Yes, I mean, well, then the challenge is to find an uncorrupted judge, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks very much, Don, for coming in, and we'll be in further contact.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
I hope to have you back when I have David back again, because you both have a deeper understanding than I've yet kind of attained, and it's been really useful having you on. Thanks, Don.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I look forward to having you on my show starting sometime next month. I'm booked up for the month of March. So
great. Anytime, Don.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that's Evident Footprints at 1 o'clock Eastern on BBS Radio. Okay, David, I'm afraid though we've only got a couple of 3 minutes left here. You're the head of the Hey, thanks, David. I hope I can get you back, and I'll study your work more, and thank you very much. You're a brave soul, David. Thank you for your service to us all.